This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lin Mark, Kusu Chuang and Sharitz Abdullah. The Chinese yuan has also been depreciating and China may soon have to resort to dumping its treasuries. Of course, this is all happening against the backdrop of US-China trade tensions. So the offshore yuan has slumped 2.4% this month, reaching the weakest since December.
China has $1.13 trillion in American treasuries, a fraction of the total $22 trillion in US debt. So for every $22 trillion in US debt outstanding, China has over one of them. And that's a lot for one country to hold. So they've got a lot of firepower. And I think they're trying to use this to basically arrest the yuan's decline.
Now, China also does have a history of selling treasuries to support the yuan. So in 2016, they unloaded about $188 billion of treasuries as the yuan sank almost 7% amid capital flight. So for more on China and the yuan, we have on the line with us Han Tan, market analyst at FXTM and quite a familiar voice here on BFM. Han, thanks for joining us. What is the reason behind China for offloading its treasury notes and what can they gain from this?
Well, the idea for Chinese policymakers to offload their holdings of U.S. treasuries is to primarily try and prop up or defend the Chinese yuan. However, it's not that simple of a relationship there. Now, we do note the latest data from the U.S. Treasury. There was this slight reduction in March, keeping in mind this data was from a couple of months ago. We'll certainly be paying attention to this week's data to see if there's a substantial decline in the Fed's custody holdings. In other words, what the Fed holds on behalf of other central banks. So we'll certainly keep an eye on that. But broadly speaking, you know, if you are, say, referring to wide-scale selling of U.S. treasuries by China, we see that as a tail risk. We don't think that's likely at this point in time because keeping in mind that the weaker yuan is helping China to offset the effects of the recently heightened and broadened U.S. tariffs on Chinese exports. So there's a hierarchy of objectives there, and there's not necessarily a clear-cut net positive outcome if China were to do so in an outsized manner.
Now, Han, with regards to the currency, what do you think the Chinese policymakers' tolerance range is with regards to the yuan against the USD?
Yeah, look, I think broadly speaking, policymakers in China, they are likely to be more tolerant of more yuan weakness over the near term. Again, because the currency acts as this pressure valve, right, whereby a weaker yuan can help offset the effects of, again, those U.S. tariffs on Chinese exports. In other words, that weaker currency is going to help China retain its competitiveness in the global markets. Also, you got to keep in mind that Chinese government officials in recent years, they have repeatedly said that they're not going to engage in competitive devaluation. They're going to allow markets to have more of a say on the yuan. So they want to be seen as adhering to that stance as well. So to be more specific in terms of the tolerance range, look, I think the yuan has to get a lot closer to that 7 mark against the U.S. dollar. And looking at the charts, that 7 number, that's been a strong resistance line in recent years. So if we head north of 6.9 from where we are right now, get closer to that 7, I think that's when we could perhaps see policymakers become less tolerant of that weaker yuan.
Yeah, Han, if the yuan continues to depreciate, which ASEAN currency will depreciate most along with it in tandem?
Right. Chuang, to be honest, it's not that straightforward of a correlation because, look, there are a range of factors that are influencing the performance of ASEAN currencies. From domestic political uncertainties, we have seen elections come and go for regional economies. Then also you got to factor in external events, right, such as the global growth outlook, resilience of the U.S. dollar, broader risk sentiment, etc. But, you know, just to try and help us understand the somewhat loose correlation between the yuan and some ASEAN currencies. So if we look at, say, what's called the coefficients of correlation, historically, over the past 2 years, the Singapore dollar has the highest correlation with the offshore yuan, with the latter accounting for about 40 plus percent of the moves in the Singapore dollar over the past 2 years. But if you look at recent history, it's the Thai baht over the last 2 weeks that has strengthened the most, both against the U.S. dollar and also the yuan. So, again, there are a whole host of factors at play here. I think, broadly speaking, when we look at U.S.-China trade tensions, look, I'll be keeping an eye on economies that are open, that are trade-dependent. So economies like Singapore and Malaysia come to mind. But keep in mind, should these trade tensions escalate, that's going to weigh not just on the broader Asian context, but also on the EM, the emerging markets universe as well.
Thank you so much for joining us. And that was Han Tan of FXTM, spotlighting very broadly the Singapore dollar and the Thai baht. But he's also going to be taking a look at open and trade-dependent economies like ours. Now, in the meantime, after escalating the trade war last week, U.S. President Donald Trump has now ramped up the telco war. So the president has signed an order that's expected to restrict Huawei and fellow Chinese telecommunications company ZTE Corp from selling their equipment in the U.S. So shortly afterward, the Commerce Department said it had put Huawei on a blacklist that could forbid it from doing business with American companies.
So not surprisingly, these actions will of course aggravate Beijing, because both countries are in high-level trade talks that is just seems to be going nowhere. In fact, this trade war seems to be escalating. Now, of course, Trump has threatened to impose tariffs on almost all imports from China after last week hiking duties on some $200 billion in Chinese products.
Yeah, so you know, this executive order that Trump has declared, he's basically declaring a national emergency relating to the threat against the information and communication technology and services. So this executive order didn't name any countries, but we all know, and all companies, but we all know who basically U.S. is probably referring to, and insisted that the order wasn't aimed specifically to China. The Commerce Department moved to Huawei on its entity list means U.S. companies will need a special license to sell products to Chinese companies.
So the executive order doesn't outright ban U.S. sales by other companies, but it is going to give greater authority to the Commerce Department to review any products or purchases by firms connected to adversarial countries, or including China. And Commerce, in conjunction with national security agencies, is expected to determine who is considered an adversary as part of regulations to be written in the next 150 days. But the fact that the U.S. has taken aim at Huawei, or seems to have taken aim at Huawei in particular, is not really surprising, considering we've seen the U.S. call them a security risk multiple times over the last few months. We've also seen U.S. prosecutors indicting the company on charges of trade secrets theft. Canada's arrested one of their key executives on sanctions charges. And diplomats have pressed allies to bar Huawei from 5G networks, saying that they are subject to Chinese law and it could raise the risk of espionage.
I wanted to be a little too oblique about this whole issue, but didn't America also accuse Iraq of holding weapons of mass destruction, which were never actually discovered? So it looks as if China has grabbed America's adorations from the Middle East, and maybe disguising the larger issue here, which is the fact that China is the new economic giant in the world, and it doesn't quite like the fact that it's been dismantled from the number one position.
Yeah, and also, you know, I just wanted to highlight the statement coming from Holin Zhao, the Secretary General of the International Telecommunication Union, who is the umbrella overseeing the 5G technology development as well as mm-hmm. the allocation of spectrum. Now, you know, they're saying that it is unsubstantiated, and all these allegations are driven by politics and not by evidence. And, you know, what he's trying to say is also to encourage Huawei to be given the equal opportunity to bid for businesses and during the operational process. If you find anything wrong, then you can charge them and accuse them.
Yeah, so the larger question, I mean, a couple of weeks ago when I spoke to the MCMC here, Hit Honcho, Lishak, he mentioned that Malaysia is open to using Huawei and other technology companies, so long as one doesn't take precedence over another and one doesn't dominate the landscape over another. So does America know something that we don't? Or do we know something that America doesn't know? Or is it the fact that we just have less to lose from doing business with China than America does?
And your point about the Iraq's mythical weapons of mass destruction.
Till today.
They still haven't found any. I guess that raises the question of whether America is crying wolf in this scenario in order to further their own interests. But eventually, you know, as with the story of the boy who cried wolf, whether or not eventually people are just going to stop listening to the US entirely.
Well, no, it's America and people have got to pay attention. It's also very similar to this whole 6-month moratorium on trade on trade tariffs on foreign car makers in America. The threat from the Trump administration is that they are basically conniving and basically cheating America of its ability to innovate its car makers. But actually, the fact of the matter is that foreign car makers have out-innovated and out-costed American car makers since the 70s.
So moving on to other Chinese sinbonats, I believe you called them, Chuang. Companies like China's biggest internet companies, Alibaba and Tencent, are continuing to boom even as the Chinese economy slows down. So both companies have reported robust quarterly earnings, bucking a general economic slowdown which the trade feud with the US could exacerbate. The internet giants also signaled that as their core businesses mature, they're going to be focusing on newer and smaller initiatives. And because they've so far thrived by winning over hundreds of millions of consumers, with Alibaba dominating e-commerce and Tencent focusing on video games.
I've got a very important question, Lin-Mark. What are the biggest dogs in the world? Are they St. Bernards, really, or are they Afghan hounds?
Are
Alibaba's Afghan hounds or St. Bernards?
Isn't it the Tibetan Mastiff?
The Tibetan Mastiff is not small. That's right. So, of course, Alibaba dominates e-commerce in China. Tencent focuses on video games. And now that new customers are getting harder to find, Alibaba is now building up its food delivery and cloud computing units, for example. And Tencent, financial services. So this whole global domination thing. And some would say that, the Chinese technology paradigm is actually has equaled or surpassed America's, which also kind of like obliquely explains Trump and America's stance on Chinese corporations.
And speaking about cloud computing, that is the space where a lot of tech companies are competing at the moment. I mean, a lot of them are getting into that. And Apple also has started, getting into businesses like video games as well.
So another important thing to note is that Tencent is 10% of the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index. So how Tencent performs will definitely have an immediate impact on that. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.